It's a particular form of meditation you find also in Theravada Buddhism, and if there are 10 types of it. You find it in Vajrayana, you find it in Theravada, and actually it's the same thing coming from different schools of Buddhism. And it comes by the power of samadhi. Samadhi is very refined, highly focused attention, in which case you, in this particular type of meditative discipline, you focus on the kind of the quintessences of different elements. Okay, so for example, the very essence of earth or water or fire or so forth, you focus in on that and you kind of capture that essence with your mind, your highly focused kind of laser type of mind. You capture that essence, and then by capturing it, then you may also project it. So you may capture kind of the essence of water element or fluidity, and then project that in the experiential domain of people around you. And you may actually have something transform into the water by the power of your mind. Okay? And it actually, according to His Holiness, may actually perform the functions of water. It may feel wet and so forth. So His Holiness was raising this, and it's a widely accepted fact in meditative experience in multiple Buddhist schools. But then His Holiness was asking, well, in that kind of projected water, the appearance of water coming out of the power of samadhi, what is it actually transforms into? It's called the substantial cause. What is it actually transforms into that water that you've actually meditatively projected, okay, since it seems to be performing the functions of water. Maybe fish can swim in and so forth. And I think the geisha behind me said that what actually happens here is that by the power of samadhi, you manipulate earth element, for example, you manipulate that so it takes on the guise of water element. And the reason for that is because in the Buddhist kind of chemical
atomic theory,
you have molecules that are composed of 8 particles comprised of earth, water, fire, and air, not space. Earth, water, fire, air, and the
derivatives.
Derivative elements. So each molecule, so to speak, has each of the 4 elements. That is solidity, fluidity, heat, and motility. Each one is there. So the meditator will then, by projecting, by manipulating these molecules, draw out the water element out of the molecule of earth, or something that's manifesting as earth, which was previously manifesting dominantly earth. He's going to suppress that and draw out from it the water element. His Holiness heard this explanation and said, that's pretty nifty.
So His Holiness was explaining that in these texts there are quite a lot of amazing qualities or abilities that are mentioned as a result of one can acquire as a result of high levels of meditation or samadhi.
Specific samadhi, this very focused attention.
And one of which is that the ability to walk in space. And even here, one way of looking at this is to conceptually understand it so that the yogi, by the power of his or her meditation, really sort of accentuates the property of earth element and solidity, and then utilizes that out of his meditation power.
Draws out the more concrete elements of space, space particles, quantized space. Draws that out and then actually walk on it. We're getting pretty esoteric.
Cosmology, they share this, isn't it? That's a big bang chain. nangge du sugi yo. Tan zumshin nangge du jig, shubu chudul shin, eni sadul shin, midul rugol. Chayasaga di zumshin space du di gangli ya, di ding zumshin nyo tashi yo. Chayasaga go dingin zingi tobji, ta go lubur ta, lubu kiyam shiro ta. Ta anda tegi di, kor big bang shin yon deyadi, kor evolution gandro de go. Dim ma doshin, chigwa miru samchay.
There seems to be at least a parallel in principle with the Buddhist view here and some of the basic principles of modern cosmogony, the formations of the universe from the time of the Big Bang, in the sense that in the Big Bang theory, all of the coarse elements, the solid elements of the universe and the gaseous and the fluid and so forth, are all actually emerging from space, from the vacuum, from the relative vacuum. And out of that emerge these various configurations of matter and energy. It's a very, very widely, commonly held view. That in fact all the physical constituents of the universe are actually emerging from space. Well, there's a very similar view in Buddhism, it goes back to especially to Kalachakra, that all of the physical constituents, again, solid elements in the universe, fluid, combustion, heat, and motility, all of these are actually all emerging from space. And actually space particles, this notion of space being quantized or being corpuscular in nature, is very much in this Kalachakra view, which is considered by many the most refined view in Buddhism. So then the idea in principle that in these quanta of space, or these space particles, out of which all the gross physical constituents of the universe emerge, that you might meditatively be able to draw out the element of solidity out of space, in principle makes a perfectly good sense. Now, that happens naturally in the course of cosmogony, in the evolution of the universe, without anybody applying meditative powers. The solid, the fluid, and so forth, the various physical constituents of the universe, naturally emerge out of space. But now, in the meditative process, you may kind of override or draw out, by the power of samadhi, the kind of the physical, the solid constituent of space, draw that out, and then utilize that meditative practice. His Holiness did emphasize, though, in terms of this whole realm of siddhis, what we call paranormal abilities, there are various ways to achieve them, and what he's speaking about here is one particular avenue, not at all the only one, where you achieve this by the power of samadhi. There are other ways to achieve these siddhis, or paranormal abilities as well, that are not so contingent upon samadhi as such. This is straight kind of mechanics of a very refined mind manipulating physical reality. This was kind of an internal conversation on this side of this whole issue of this type of samadhi and so forth. It wasn't really tried to... This is not evangelical. This was an internal discourse among the Buddhists.
But I would say... Partly it was in response to my skepticism. I was informing His Holiness that even when I was a student in the monastery, I always found that part of the literature hard to take.
Well, maybe the explanation for it, but that... So an example is with an amputee, somebody who's lost their arm. For many years afterwards, in some cases, if they close their eyes, they have the full perception of the arm, even movement of the arm. They can feel grasping, things like that. So the brain has the capacity for the generation of very, very complex perceptions, so that the idea that you could then spontaneously generate the sensation of water or whatever I'm a brain scientist. I think it's possible the brain could actually arrange itself so that the perception of it being there. The question is, if somebody else is in the room with you, do they also see it?
That's the catch. In the Buddhist view, it's not just an internal hallucination, and that's the catch.
One thing that scientists and Buddhists have in common is our great appreciation of empirical evidence. I've heard you say this many times. And so I wonder why the Buddhists say that this other subtle level of consciousness does not depend on the brain. Why do you say that? Is there any evidence for that? I mean, in view of the fact every other level of consciousness has been shown to depend on the brain, isn't it parsimonious, in the absence of any evidence, to suppose that this might as well? Like, at least leave it as an open question.
Sini di, 되면 시바키지 담보 숙제 내게 배이나 애니 시바키지 심을 줄에 숙제 내게 쳐.
나는 뭐랑 그 포인트를죠. 근데 남시 그 레바탄 대화 심을 줄.
저거 저거 안 해서 담아로 있네.
저 간다 좀 미 가서 찍네. 찍다 거기는 가서
왜세 요디?
왜세
랑섬 지 요디? 나는 숙제는 맞으면 지 요디 가래.
숙제는 맞으면 바지 영원다고 다들 제대로 된다면 대화 체 체면은 맞아. 체면은 아니 레벨 된 거 말해.
다치 왜세게 차? 그래서 정신 좀 나러리야 아니 에 나버시 타달이야. 왜세 직체 캡이 송대하기. 다 차이 틀도 모두 왜세 장성 뭐 짱냐들 갈래 이러잖아. 다시 이 수준하고 띵가 아니나.
네스.
다리 어 나제도 좀 가차래 제를 봐. 그래서 가차래 제를 시행인데 해지 안 말해.
모라선 다데 디카르 스탑 에비던스 프루프.
어 저저 저 디스도 와. 저저 다디 세아디 김젠디 에 가자. 남심이면 남심이 년심을 시행 주선 코로나 또 줄마다. 시 경험의 여자스 이 경험 경험이 시작고야. 디 탐절 시안이 인더디 우르무르대체. 에니 외세샵 말다. 아, 시바 시바 징지 줄을 때는 연구가 될 때네. 다 시바 가마지 가서 그래. 시바 가마서 다시 또 시바 기지 더 먹고라. 니네들 영수는 잘해 제기 풍불 들 때는 시바 깨버이나. 아니 다 시바 수준이 깨어. 다 들어 다 쏟들이.
Consciousness
itself,
something more, the very
next.
It's
not so much a view that is based upon an empirical evidence as such. It's more. It's also neither is the view based upon a belief of pre-existence, life before death, and life before birth and life after that, which is actually part of the Buddhist belief, because some people may explain the reality of the subtle level of consciousness, clear light. Because there must be something that comes from the previous life to this life and goes on to the next life. But the Buddhist... For example, like the non-Buddhist Indian schools that believe in the notion of an Atman, immutable, unchanging, eternal soul, they use the argument of the rebirth and the pre-existence. But the Buddhist view is really based upon a certain... It's understanding
of the
nature, law of causality and the nature of how Buddhism understands the nature of consciousness, the nature of mind. So on the one hand, there is the principle of causality, which states that every event must come from causes and conditions. Every event must have a cause. Premise.
It's not only cause, but actually things need more than mere contributing circumstances. It's more of a kind of a conservation principle, as the analogy would be in physics, and that is any type of configuration of mass or energy,
something actually
has to transform into it. You never get something from nothing. And so likewise in Buddhism, when you get to the actual nature of consciousness, and so generally speaking, if you speak, what is a cause? How do we even define a cause? It's something that facilitates the actuation of something or the occurrence of something. It's a facilitator. So anything that facilitates the emergence of something else would be called a causal influence. But now within that category of causes, there are various types. There are catalytic causes simply that contribute to the emergence of a certain phenomena. But there are also causes that actually transform into the nature of the effect in question. So this is commonly noted in physics, where it's a conservation of mass energy principle, that no matter what you have in a configuration of mass energy, always something transforms into it. Now we come to the very experience of consciousness itself, which is of nature of sarikṣam. It's that mere event or experience of luminosity and cognition that we know from a first-hand perspective. What is it like to be conscious? And the salient features of that are this luminosity of consciousness and the fact that consciousness has implicit in it a cognizant factor to it. And so that is the kind of the essential nature of consciousness itself. Well, what is it that actually transforms into that sheer event of cognizance, of luminous cognizance. And from a Buddhist perspective, we say there must be something that transforms into it, otherwise you get something out of nothing. So something transforms into it. Other things like neurons, synapses, and so forth, genes, food, and all of that may be contributing, and they do contribute from moment to moment, to the emergence of moments of consciousness. But that which actually transforms into the very nature of the conscious event itself has to be of the same type. It, too, must be a conscious event. All right?
숙진 되게 안 돼 빠지게 가는 시야 봐야고 숙진이 년에는 인심이지 숙진이 과를 마다 이 시베키 두 말이 그래서 숙진 탈도 이제 제대로 참을 가는 시야 봐라 되는 시 나 시야를 자유인데 시베 시야 거랑 뭘 누른 게 팬도 지금 난리야 시야 거랑 그런 신기 중가마 중가서 개진가마 시 과래
되나
어디 시방가마 여태 주인 거야
so there's a close parallel here
난 시야를 도망매 있어 시베 기운을 도망매 있어
So there's a close parallel here.
No.